Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Transformation Cafe with your host, Robin Misevich. Transformation Cafe, a weekly half hour of light, topical conversation about health, wellness, happiness, personal growth, spirituality, and other insights. We're glad you're here. Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul. Now, let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight's show.
Well, hey, everyone. I want to welcome you to the Transformation Cafe. I'm your host, Robin Macevez, and we are the Cafe Book Club. We are talking about Getting the Love That You Really Want by Harville Hendricks and Helen Hunt. And as always, we have our wonderful co-host with us, Miss Amy. How are you tonight?
Well, before I say something, I need to ask a couple of questions that start off the chapter. Before you speak, ask yourself, is it necessary? Is it true? Does it improve the silence? So I don't know if I'm going to say anything.
Wow.
It's necessary.
Okay, good. All right.
We're on Blog Talk Radio. It's necessary.
Okay,
good.
Okay, all right. I'm back. But I'm bum. Uh-oh, Robin's getting quiet. This is scary.
Hello? Really?
Oh, Robin. This will be a great show. We'll just laugh the whole time.
Okay, there we go. I accidentally put it on mute. You're like, yeah, we were, well, we kind of like, I just basically baked on that one for a little bit. So, how are you, Michelle?
That's amazing. You just created the sacred space of laughter.
Mm-hmm. I did. That was great. I love that. I love that. So, today's chapter is talking about, and I'm going to be real honest on this chapter. It's called, well, and we have the first edition. And I'll go with Amy for in a second. It's called Containing Rage. And, you know, I look at that, I go, oh, I don't really want to read about containing rage, right? I got to go, no, I don't think I do. So what's the title of the chapter for you, Amy?
It actually is called Creating a Sacred Space.
Creating Sacred Space. Yeah, that's way more like, yeah, I could do that. Sure.
Well, considering the 1980s, it was probably appropriate back then. I mean, we are in 2018.
somewhere within that timeline, yeah. So,
depending on the hour.
What's going on.
And
exactly.
this version was done many years after that. And what I appreciate about them is that they updated based on what they learned.
Yeah. And I'm so glad Michelle's with us tonight, because I definitely want to talk about when it comes to working through anger. And Michelle and I had gone to a grief yoga class, and a part of the process was, you know, feeling into the grief, letting go of the grief, and getting into the anger of suppressed things. And we actually were beating cushions. And
yeah, well, we were directed to. But you and I both instinctively knew not to do that.
Mm. Yeah, we both went, this doesn't feel right, and yet everybody was beating these cushions.
I did beat the cushion, but I beat it in a way that was about my self-empowerment.
Right. Mm.
It was just using my strength. I was, like, physically showing, like, using my body strength, like, exhibiting my strength instead of getting the anger out. Because he says in this book that there's been studies that in the neurosciences showing that when you go into the anger, you actually create more of the anger response in your body. And it's hard to get out of. The couples were having a hard time getting out of it when they were being directed in the old book, in the old version, to share their rage toward each other in a certain kind of context.
Right.
and they weren't being able to get out of it, and the person, like, on the receiving end was being threatened.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, even to have an experience with a significant person in your life, and they're you're in whatever level, you're allowing them to rage at you, right?
Well, and the brain, reptilian brain, right, does not know the difference. You say, oh, no, it's not
exactly
about you. But, the body's going, no, that's not true. And let me start out here at the beginning. I have the latest version, and it starts out with, two people cannot be passionate friends unless they feel safe in each other's company. And with that, you know, yes, we're going to get the anger out at each other, you know, not at, quote, unquote, at each other, but that you feel like it's at you, you're not going to feel safe.
And I was, a recording on compassionate communication that I was listening to by Mark Waldman today, and it was saying that there was a study done where people were actually just reading the word no, and within less than a second, they were measuring what happened in the brain, and it was turning on the amygdala, which is the old brain, by reading the word no.
Wow.
So it's really powerful what we say, and even our facial expressions with people.
You know, that's interesting for me, that I learned a long time ago as a contract negotiator. I never say no. I was like, what else can we do? How do we make sense out of this? Because I guess intuitively, I would feel it when you would say no, people would like brace up against it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a threat to our survival.
So that makes so much sense.
Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of sense.
We are sensitive.
We are so sensitive. And, you know, that's good. That's so good. Well, you know, so here we're talking about rage.
And let's like to make sure anybody that doesn't have that very last version, the 20th anniversary version, that you do not want to use the full container exercise.
Right. I agree. Yeah. That's great. It's a very good, you know, in the small print, right? Making sure that people know that.
Well, I just want to add one little piece. Can I add one little piece of the science?
Absolutely. Yeah, please.
The science says that when we're face to face with another person, when the neurons fire in the other person's brain, the same neurons fire in our own brain.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So
amazing.
It's so amazing. So we really need to be caring and loving and kind towards ourselves about who we are in the presence of, because their brain, whatever their brain is doing, can change what our brain is doing.
Yep.
But vice versa, if we're also really, really strong in who we are and the love that who we are, our brain can change their brain.
Mhm. You know, and to me that was really just going totally into the golden rule. You know, treat others as I would want them to treat me.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
I don't know if either one of you have read it, but there's a book called Social Intelligence? I think it's Social Intelligence, where they talk about the mirroring neurons. That's a really good read.
Mm-hmm.
How it affects us, you know, and talking more about that. But the social intelligence really talks about that mirroring neuron. And I'm not finding it right away, but there's a couple sentences in here where we're talking about this, and that how when you really get this, when you're berating other people, being negative towards other people, it's really self-abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because the brain can't determine whether it's going outward or inward.
Right? Yeah, I mean, I think that's really huge.
It's very huge. And I was coming home yesterday, and I live near a park, and people have a tendency to, you know, like sit around the picnic tables and drink. my park, and especially in the afternoon. And there were two couples that we had been, you could tell they had been sitting there drinking for a little bit. And the girl from one couple and the guy from another, and the other couple, were just going at it, yelling at each other. And I totally looked at it from a different perspective after reading this chapter. You know,
so
about,
how did
you know,
that change your perspective?
Well, part of it was, you know, the fact that they were yelling at themselves. They weren't really yelling at each other. They were yelling at themselves, even though that, you know, they were looking at each other and yelling. It was like they were telling themselves these things.
Mm.
I just thought it was just so interesting. And it was, I mean, maybe in the past I would have like, well, Dr. Bear, I better call the police. And these guys are like going at it. I mean, you know, you could tell that there was this processing going on for themselves. And, you know, the guy had a tendency to kind of back off and let the woman kind of do whatever she was doing. So you could tell he was giving her space, you know, while they were yelling at each other. So I just had a sense that it was going to be something where they were seeking to, you know, express for themselves what was going on. So it was just really interesting. Yeah. When I really look at it, it's like it's definitely really looking at it from a totally different way that I never even had thought about before. So I really want to be grateful for the fact that I got to kind of watch that, you know, and even having my flower shop, you know, having somebody come in just the way that they're interacting with me, you know. It just gives you a lot of different things to think about, in the fact that whatever you're putting out, you're actually giving to yourself.
Yep. I mean, you truly, truly are. I mean, we talk about that, but we really, really are.
Yeah, that's so profound. And, you know, and to me, it's just like everything that on a spiritual level, you know, just for the Transformation Cafe, when it comes to something that's just this really deep spiritual thing, it's so simple. And the most profound things that come on a soul level are so simple. But yet can feel very complex and, you know, and just have a lot of layers to them. But yet here we are when it's just like, I'm just going to express what I want for me because I'm taking care of myself, hopefully. One way or another, I'm taking care of myself. You know, even if I'm yelling and I'm mad, yay, care of myself. Because in this moment, that's where I'm feeling like I need to express, not even in the, whether it's conscious or unconscious, and hopefully we can do it in a conscious way.
So they took away the full container exercise. And
can you explain what that was a little bit, Amy, just so we have it as a point of reference?
What the exercise was?
Yeah, just in a reference, and then how it's changed.
Well, you know, basically you were just, you know, releasing your anger at the parent at the other person. Mm-hmm. And, again, all they did was really reinforce that whatever the issues were and build that store of anger between the people. This exercise that had been designed to release stored up anger seemingly was capable of generating it. So it wasn't really releasing it. It was causing even more.
Perpetuating it, yeah. What I thought was interesting, too, is with, you know, here we're talking about rage. One of the first things is that we talk about in the chapter is that rage can be disguised as depression. And I mean,
I couldn't understand. I'm having a hard time understanding what you're saying, Robin. What did you say?
I said that in the chapter, I talked about rage being disguised as a depression.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And then actually, he actually uses the word masquerade.
Masquerade?
I love the fact that he uses that word, masquerade. Yeah. And the fact that, you know, it's in having the, in detecting depression and masquerade, you know, in detecting rage, it can masquerade as depression.
Absolutely.
And that's even more profound to me. Instead of disguising it, it's masquerading. I don't know. I guess it might be a nuance, but it's just very, very interesting with that. And I was actually sharing that with one of my daughters today, and it was, you know, she asked to gasp, and she was like, oh, my gosh. Right? I think how many people are, you know, when you know of people who are sad, or gosh, what's the percentage of people in the world that are depressed? because we've been raised in this whole the concept of like, and they do a really, he does a really great job talking about this. At all these different ages in our life, we're basically we're mad and we're not really, in this, you know, not encouraged to be able to feel what we're feeling. We're like, you shouldn't act like that, or you know, you, one of the ones examples that really sticks out for me is like you're, you know, you're a teenager and you get mad, you go and slam your door to go to your room. You know, and you get reprimanded for that. We're like, don't you slam that door? Well, better the door than something else, right? So,
well,
you know,
let's come back to this, you know, sentence that Michelle had talked to. How what they're saying that the brain, the fact about the brain that the unconscious mind experiences all anger as danger to itself. So the anger, you know, you would, could express that outwardly, or you could express it inwardly, which is really depression.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a response to that this anger is a danger to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because when they took away the container exercise and gave the different exercises, like the holding exercise, it was to encourage the couple to just share their real emotions that were underlying anger, because they said that underlying all anger are the emotions of grief, fear, and sadness.
Mm-hmm.
And when they expressed the grief, fear, and sadness, they actually felt relief without reinforcing it. But when you express the anger, you don't feel the relief. I mean, you may feel the relief, but you were reinforcing it. So it's interesting what happens in the brain with the expression of grief, fear, and sadness versus anger, is that it's a reinforcing with anger, but it's not with grief, fear, and sadness, which is a very interesting way that the brain would function.
Yeah. And again, like you're saying, it's really getting to the root of it. So it's really authentic, right, and honest energy, if you want to look at it that way, where the anger is really, where you're disguising itself as whatever that other thing is, whether it's grief or whatever the emotion, then it isn't the real emotion.
And they also had the experience of when they expressed the underlying emotion that they felt more bonded to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Versus
mm-hmm.
when the anger was expressed, they were more threatened and defensive with each other.
Mm-hmm. That makes so much sense to me.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me, too. And, you know, with the fear, you know, he brings out that point of, with that anger, there's a potential for abandonment. And I think that's such a, you know, like I said, going back to the experiences of, you know, I act a certain way and then, you know, I'm not loved and I'm pushed away. And like sent to my room or whatever, you know, because I'm abandoned.
So let's talk about that holding exercise a little bit, where he had said that my gut feeling was that this primal holding position would elicit a flood of emotions, and so his idea was really reparenting from this space of love and, you know, holding as in you would a child, and then letting them talk about what was real for them from the heart of it, or however you want to make sense, those real core issues. And part of what we've been talking about, and Michelle, you've really brought lovely, really amazing to the table, he always talks about how it has to be that significant other relationship. When I was in my practicum USM, my master's in spiritual psychology, we had to prove mastery as a client and as a counselor, and we had to do that twice. And the first time it was a very kind of violent, ragey kind of thing that I was working with somebody, and I had to match their energy. And then the final session was a woman who had been abandoned as a baby. And what we came down, there was like 10 other people in the room that were observing, and what I ended up doing was cradling her. And everybody else in the room surrounded us and cradled. And she was able to receive love that she had never had before and had a significant healing. But I wasn't, you know, her partner, but there was still a significant healing that happened in a very similar kind of process.
Beautiful.
So I do, I have experience. It doesn't have to be a partner. It can be people who want to support you and want to help you to do that healing.
Well, they did it with the partner when they were in the workshops. They had the partner do it rather than the therapist because they wanted the bonding to happen between the partners.
But, you know, but throughout the whole process there, they always talked about how it the healing's only going to happen when it happens with somebody who's your mate.
Yeah. Beautiful.
So, yay. That's, you know, certainly a great opportunity for it, but it doesn't have to just be that.
Right. I thought it was interesting, too, is that when they just gathered information from the couples who have done the holding exercise, that the couples would say that they would realize that they'd had endured many of the same, quote-unquote, insults in childhood, but had adapted to them in different ways.
Yep.
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah.
So in that experience, it's a way to bond and to celebrate the otherness and allow the other person to be who they are, because a lot of what happens in the with the couple is the threat that they're a different person, a separate person with their own wants and their own needs, and the old brain finds that threatening. So to be able to be in an experience where you're actually bonding over a shared experience, but celebrating also and accepting that you have different adaptations, I think that's a really healing thing, and I can't imagine what that does in the brain.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's a win-win.
Absolutely.
You know, everybody's like, what? What's going on here?
Well, and he talks about in removing all negativity. Says once we remove the full container exercise from the Imago Theory, then added the holding exercise, couples began to move more, to make more rapid progress. Their conflicts became more subdued, and their mutual admiration grew. And then he talks about here. Keep in mind that the goal is not to repress the feelings behind our negative thoughts or behaviors that would only add to our stored up, pent up emotions, but rather to bring them out in the open and to see them for what they really are, a warning sign that some aspect of our relationship needs work.
Imagine doing this work and that once you've done this exercise of actually being able to hold one another and stuff does come up, you just like look at each other and say, "Would it be okay if I hold you right now?" You know, when you're like, losing it or something. But, you know, I can you see how it's that, you know, total safeness. Like, I can be safe and being able to express. And then I just, the need for those things, you know, just, I can see it, you know, quickly diminishing. You know, because you're finally getting, like, you know, what this book has been all about. Because you're finally getting that love and care that you've wanted all your life to be a caretaker. You know?
The accepting, the nurturing, the calm, the attention, the non-judgmental experience. That's all we've ever wanted.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, and that just really opens you up. Who could I be with that? Who could I be?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it really just, you know, it's like giving... You know, like I in my mind's eye, I see a flower that's all shriveled up, right? And you water it, and boom, it opens up.
I had that happen today.
Somebody watered you, and you opened
it. No, I was working with some hydrangeas, and they actually had. It was interesting because one thing that a lot of people don't realize is when you take flowers into kind of a toxic environment, the flowers are actually helped to try to shift the energy. And it takes a toll on the flower, believe me. You know, they can totally look beat up, and you're like, wow, these flowers aren't lasting out very long. How come? Well, you know, I do a weekly bouquets going to a care facility for people who are recovering from, you know, surgeries and stuff like that. And they're not in the hospital anymore. They're at these care centers. And, I mean, literally, the bouquets we had gone in there yesterday, and they, you know, they wanted to change the larger bouquets and stuff like that. So we switched them out. And then it was real interesting because the majority of the bouquet was fine, but the hydrangeas that it were, like, in the top of the arrangements, they both were going out. But everything else was okay. And there shouldn't have been really a reason why those particular flowers went out, but they both did. I took them out, we cut them, and I, you know, with hydrangeas, you can submerge them underwater, and they'll actually drink, and the flowers themselves will take water besides just the stem. It's a little tip for people. And, you know, once I let it be in there for maybe about a half hour and took them out, they just totally revive themselves.
Mm.
So it was interesting that, you know, we took them out of this heavy-duty environment, brought them back into the shop, and it basically nurtured them, and they basically started flourishing again.
Mm.
Yeah, so it was interesting watching, you know, watching that whole thing and then talking about it with my.
Well, can we talk about the practice of what Harville and Helen came to decide was to eliminate all negativity from a relationship?
I love that. I love
that. A commitment to eliminate all negativity from a relationship. And they were talking about anything that was to project shame, blame, criticism, an invasiveness, like you don't think that, this is what you should do, avoidance, condemnation. And they gave an example of something like just as like impatience or frustration. And they made a commitment to do it in their own relationship and then brought it forward as a practice. In the Imago workshops, and they started to have a relationship of chronic adoration.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
And when somebody, whoever initiated the negativity, needed to counteract it with three positive statements about the other person. No repeats. And it brought to them, it revealed to the people who had started the negativity things about the other person that they had maybe overlooked or taken for granted. And so it actually increased their appreciation. When they made this agreement and would say something negative, it would help them to increase their appreciation about the other person.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. All negativity. Like, this is a no negativity zone.
Mm-hmm. When he talked about here that there are moments when we felt love and empathy for each other, but that was not enough. We still felt a lingering tension lurking in the relationship. Love that. And then what they said, what we eventually discovered, it was we were allowing negativity to rupture the connection between us.
I love that, you know, they were taking
I
the
am willing
to do that
put
themselves.
My commitment, right? I am, and it takes practice, and it takes a commitment to say, I am not allowing negativity in this relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean you're not honest. It doesn't mean you don't talk about things, but you don't need to be critical. You don't need to be negative towards each other.
And how safe would a person feel in that type of relationship?
Knowing that that was the commitment. Wow.
Thrive. Yeah, just totally thrive.
Thrive. Is that what you're saying, Robin? Thrive?
Uh-huh. Thriving. Yeah.
Wow.
Totally thrive.
Yeah. And
well,
after reading that, I could feel all the subtle ways in which I have negativity with my mom. Just frustration and impatience and even sometimes a sigh or a non-responsiveness. a tinge of withholding. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow.
Yeah, it really starts unfolding, right? I've been thinking about this for the last few days myself, and it's like, wow, I had no idea that I was doing that. Because it's so covert.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and
the
cool
thing
about
all
this, part of what... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the cool thing about this, too, is it really invites you to mm-hmm. witness with all the different things that you have going on. And like you guys, you know, saying, wow, I didn't know I did that, wow. So it's just these little, and it's almost like these pebbles in your water that ripple out. And so all these things are just totally seen in a different way.
So I want to come back to the flooding, and we're right at the end here, but let's finish up. Where I started at the very beginning of the chapter, before you speak, ask yourself, is it necessary? Is it true? Does it improve the silence? Are you going to stay with us, Robin, this time?
I am. I'm here.
Okay,
I'm not going to mute.
On our way out here, I mean, I'm so honored to do this work with both of you. That this is, you know, this chapter alone can change people's lives and relationships. I really believe that. And Robin, did you want to talk at all about the positive flooding exercise?
I think I'd love for you to do that.
Well, it's quote unquote simple. The first part is that you write down things you appreciate about the other person, and then you tell them that. The second part of the exercise is each person writes down what they want to be appreciated for, and the other person appreciates them for that.
And then they say to do one part of it is about the physical features that you appreciate, and another will be the character traits you appreciate. Another will be gratitude for favors they do. And then the last one is overall feelings of love and appreciation, like, I'm so lucky that you're my partner. Or so I've been practicing with my Jack's cat.
Aww.
He goes,
how are they doing when returning that? How are they doing with that?
Well, you know, we start out with our cat, and then we work down to people. It's all good. Yeah.
If you get a cat to do it, let me tell you, you're doing good.
Yeah, really. I mean, if you can do it with a cat, that's you know, milestones of just like progress.
Here is the very last sentence in this chapter, and talks mm-hmm. about this exercise. It says, this exercise opens the floodgates and inundates people with joy.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just, you know, just the difference between joy and happiness and really allowing yourself to be there.
And Donna Eden talks about the joy circuitry, which is a real thing in our bodies.
Mm-hmm. Great conversation.
Well, you two are just such beautiful beings, and you are so reinforcing of positivity, and I'm so grateful that you include me, and I am overall so grateful that you are my friend.
Thank you.
Yeah,
and my
friend,
I really enjoyed this unfoldment of getting to see who you really are. And the more I see of you, the more I love you.
Thank you.
Yeah, awesome. You know, the anniversary edition, be able to look at these wonderful exercises and just find somebody, you know, a friend or a significant other that, you know, you can be in a place where you actually can hold them and allow yourself to feel safe and feel in a place where, you know, slowly making it committed to where, you know, still be a commitment but not allowing you to make it make a picture. How wonderful that is. You know, and it's a work in progress. And as things come up, you just, you know, love that and move on to the next thing. It's going to be a very good thing. For Harville and Helen, it's been a threat. So there you go.
Well, they've been keeping on for quite a while. So.
Yeah, we're talking 30 years, so it's just quite the dedication and And it's just sweet to see that that's something that, you know, if you want to live it and be it, it's just a gift to the planet.
Well, and then here on page 203 of the last version, one of the people that they've been working with, he was just kind of like, why do I keep doing this? And he said that, I heard Harville and Helen say in my mind, I just keep pedaling, keep on working the exercises.
Hmm. Or Dory, I just keep swimming.
There you go.
There you go. Yeah, I love you too. Well, I love you ladies, and as always, it's a pleasure to have you here at the cafe. I want to thank all of our worldwide, our just friends and family who join us every week at the cafe. And we're going to have one more. We'll be closing out the book this next week, and we'll take a little break for the 4th of July, but we'll be back on the 10th and have a couple guests on the 10th and the 17th. So we look forward to that. Amy's got special guests coming up in July, and we look forward to that. And then we're going to have our next book we've already picked out is actually a book on resilience, the 7 Keys to Finding Your Inner Strength and Overcoming Life's Hurdles. And it's actually something that Spirit just really guided me to, so I'm looking forward to working with that. So I have a copy for you, Michelle.
Woohoo!
Beautiful. Thank you.
So go forth and be resilient.
Sure.
With love and just a commitment to just keep pedaling and knowing that every day I can be a little more loving because I know it. As I love another, I'm loving myself. There you go.
Beautiful.
All right, girls. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
At the cafe.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Transformation Cafe podcast. To learn more, visit transformation-cafe.com for show notes, guest information, and links to previous shows. You can also subscribe to the Transformation Cafe podcast on iTunes. Join us again next time at the Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul.